Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity in the highway to the north, this is Safety Wars for Tuesday, September 3rd, 2024. Welcome to Disaster Preparedness Month, 2024. So here is the plan. We're going to be doing something on disaster preparation every day that we broadcast this month. It's been our tradition going way back, even before we had this program, where we would talk about disaster preparation with all of our customers, all of our clients, all of our personnel. Extremely important subject. I have a different approach to it than most people. So listen up. Now, hope you had a great weekend. Here in the States, we were celebrating our Labor Day weekend, where we celebrate the labor movement. That is the first Monday in September every year. And I feel sorry for you kids that went to school, went back to school before Labor Day. My kids went in this morning. That's where most of the kids in the Northeast have gone to that are in public schools. Private schools often have a different schedule. Now, why am I going into this? Because a lot of people in other countries have people all over the world listening. Singapore, Hong Kong, Brussels, where all the spies are. No. And that's basically it. Now, a couple of things. I want to start out by making an announcement, and you might have caught a little bit at the beginning of the program. By accident, we had Pluto TV on and an episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I often listen to that. Yesterday, news came across, and it's unfortunate because it's Star Trek week this week. It's Star Trek Day on Friday. Yeah, is that Friday? Yeah, Friday, September 6th. James Darren of Gidget fame, the old-fashioned Gidget, not the new adventures in the 80s that I watched, Gidget fame, Star Trek Deep Space Nine, T.J. Hooker, and a whole bunch of other stuff and songs. He was a teen heartthrob, all different types of stuff. He did a very good, rich career. He passed away yesterday at the age of 88. I want to send out all of our condolences to his friends and family that might be listening, as well as the numerous Star Trek fans that are listening. They're having like mini tributes online and also on Pluto TV tonight, where they were playing some Vic Fontaine themed stuff. Great guy from all accounts, great singer. If you like that type of singing, it's along the lines of Frank Sinatra. He did a lot of cover songs like that and some other stuff. So great guy there. Very memorable character. So how do we get involved in here doing this stuff on disaster response, disaster preparation? If you're doing if you do 1910-120 work, that's a HAZWOPER, Hazardous Waste Site Operations and Emergency Response, you were involved in disaster preparation and response. The way it is. Now, the question goes along these lines. How do we define all of, you know, we hear this, disaster preparation, disaster response, disaster. Does that, now we hear, because of the Ukraine war and some of the other stuff out there going on, you hear all different types of stuff, right? Well, here, let's share this. Here, that's our disaster response, right? intro to disaster response. That was what we're talking about today. And how do I get involved in this? So in after 9/11, I was involved in some very high-level cleanups, specifically the anthrax cleanups in New York for CBS and NBC. I really can't go into a lot of those things just the way it is without highly confidential people who have wanted to come on to here. We've never been able to do it. A lot of PTSD on those jobs, 9/11, the whole thing, and a lot of controversy because, as we found out, we all got a little taste of it with the COVID-19 response. If you've been through a disaster, any type of disaster, you get this all the time where government resources come out and, you know, unless they're emergency responders that are local, police, fire, EMTs, things of that nature, CERT teams, community emergency response teams, unless you're involved in something like that, you don't really, the federal government doesn't really get involved in that. And we're going to talk about the Stafford Act a little bit later on, not today. So we're going to do every day a brief thing on disaster preparation, disaster response, and then we're going to go into things. Now, this is what it comes down to. What is a disaster? Disaster, there's no real set definition. I guess if we could talk about disaster preparation, we could say that, well, disaster preparation is increasing capacity and resilience, sort of like the same thing as safety, right? Increasing capacity and resilience. That's what disaster preparation is. I guess a disaster would be not having as much capacity or resilience. That might be like the opposite, right? Prepare and not preparing, sort of thing. That could be one way. But the idea is that anything could be a disaster. How you're able to cope with things is how you're able to respond with things. Anything could be a disaster. So, for example, you might have a financial disaster. You might have a loss of job. You might have a situation come up, sick family member, house thing coming, whatever. That could be a disaster. We could think of hurricanes. We could think of floods. We could think of other weather events, power outages. Anything could be a disaster. But what's important is that you have to go and you have to assess what your situation is, analyze what you're going to do about it, all the things about it, and then you have to do the third thing, the act. Right, so AAAs is how I do it. And by the way, nobody else discusses this, as far as I know, with this or breaks things down. We're going to break things down really, really in depth here tonight before we get into the OSHA, Heat Illness and Injury Protection proposed regulations. So my first company, we were dealing with this. And right after 9/11, we had a situation where disaster preparation was in the news, constantly in the news, right? They used to talk about it all the time, right? We were going to have bigger things come about. If you were around then, you remember this stuff. We're going to have bigger things come about. We're going to have this happen, and we're going to have that happen, and we're going to have this happen, we're going to have that happen. And you get into a couple of different things here. And let me see if I could share these. Hold on. Okay, so I'm going to describe what I have here. So you had all different types of cycles, right, in this. And it's similar to, you have the disaster triangle, you have the issue attention cycle, you have the emotional life cycle of disaster here. So if you're on audio, you have this, you're hearing this. So what you have a cycle is this. You have preparedness, then you have the disaster, then you have the mitigation, and then, right, this preparedness, mitigation, disaster, then you have a response, then you have a recovery, and you get thrown right back in the preparedness. You also have the emotional life cycle on here, where you have pre-disaster, right? And then you have an impact, and then heroic, and then you have a honeymoon. Everybody gets together. Then everybody says, woof, no, nothing's going on, right? Oh, no, we're going to have problems. Then you have disillusionment. than you have working through the grief, coming to terms with it. You have all different types of triggering events and everything. Then you have reconstruction, a new normal. And then you go right back down to re-disaster and everything else that goes into that. And it goes in and again and again and again. You also have what's called the issue attention cycle, where you have a pre-problem phase. And this is more along the lines of awareness. You have the pre-problem phase. Then you have the alarm discovery, euphoric enthusiasm phase. Then you have the realizing the cost of significant progress. And then gradual decline of public interest. And that is usually what happens is with the people that need to solve problems or cause problems, they got to resolve it and everything else. They say, we're going to wait this one out. We're going to wait this one out, and then we're going to go to the post-problem phase where everybody forgets about this, and everybody then assumes that everything is great. We're all prepared, and then all of a sudden you go back to the pre-problem phase, and then something else happened. Why wasn't this resolved before? And this is the issue attention cycle that we always go through. And this is the way it is. So what's important to remember is that you forget about all these cycles. People are being manipulated with them, right? Because, again, it drives along with the news cycle. Yeah, everyone thinks that everything's resolved and it's not resolved. So here we have here what happened was right after 9/11, there was all this interest in disaster. And then in 2010, what happened? 2010, that's when everything waned. I gave it up, the company and everything else. And then we still do it a little bit because we have emergency action plans for clients. And, hey, what are your emergencies we're going to prepare for them? So we're still involved with them. But on the community level, everything went away. Everything went away. We didn't think about it. And what happened? Funding, all these disasters that they thought they were going to have, which was the chronic flu, pandemic flu. This was going to happen. They're building vaccine plans. They're building it. 2010, all of the funding went away because new administration, right? New administration, different priorities. This isn't an issue because nothing happened. And then what happens? 9 years later, COVID-19 happens. That's what happens. Starting in September of 2019, all of a sudden you can get any respirators from China. And then this snowballed into more and more and more and more problems. And then we know the rest of the history. Now we're getting back to the whole thing where, oh, this is all taken care of. We're all prepared, blah, blah, blah. And people are thinking that they're not prepared. A lot of people. I'm one of them. And now we have issues again. And it's going to come back around with something else. Now, we're hearing all different types of rumors, right? And the Bible mentions wars and rumors of wars and calamity and wrath of God kind of stuff. And times we went into that before. And I'm going to tell you this. Let me go over here. Hang on. If you're going to get into a discussion on eschatology, I have a book that I want you to read. Because it, basically modern eschatology, doom and gloom and everything else, is relatively recent. That's 1800s. This book, Revelation for Today, Images of Hope by Richard Dreske. He was a local guy here. I didn't know he was a local guy. I actually went and I bought the book online, and I have another copy of the book, and it was personally autographed by him. I got it off eBay for $4. Where it talks about all different types of stuff in the book of Revelation, traditional, and guess what? It's an image of hope with that. And that's more along the lines of traditional Christianity and the views with that. Now, people get freaked out. I'm going to tell you this. Everybody take a chill pill and everybody relax. Okay, what do you do? You have to assess what your needs are, analyze, act, prioritize, all of that stuff goes into that. So I break down all of these disasters into four categories. And you say, Jim, why? Let's see if we get them up here. Do. So category number one, add to stream. Okay, this is usually what the normal person or people have to contend with here. All right. Which is 0 to 24 hours, category 1. This is what is normally what we have to deal with. They are medical emergencies, first aid cases, fire alarms. Hold on. Right? Medical emergencies, first aid cases, fires, fire alarms, short-term power outages, short-term situations, floods. That's normally what we have to deal with. So what's the idea here? The idea is that we, and I'm sorry for driving everybody nuts, but this is reversed today here. All right. We're getting small and large. I'm the large, you know. But anyway, all this stuff is power outages, short-term situations, floods, things of that nature. That's what we need to worry about. That is what most of us do. So you have a fire alarm, you have a fire, you have an emergency, a first aid case, whatever else. Very easy to prepare for. You have a first aid case, you have first aid training, you have a first aid kit, things that are, we're going to go into what's not in a first aid kit and what is in a first aid kit, what you need to have, and everything else. So that's number one, all right? Fires. Okay, what do? This is how, you have a fire extinguisher, 911, blah, 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 everything that goes along with that. We'll talk about that. Power outages. That, in my opinion, is the biggest thing that we have to worry about. Threats to our grid, our communication systems. So, for example, we had fairly recent memory here. Let's pull this up. So fairly recent memory, what have we had? We had a North Carolina power grid attack in Moore County, North Carolina, in December 2022, where 45,000 people were left without power for several days and resulting in at least one death, where a woman could not recharge her oxygen tank. All right, with that, I don't know if they ever really solved that problem. But it was thing is damaged. The first time I heard of something like this happening was in 2013, which was right down the street from a job I'm familiar with, Metcalf Road, and one of our listeners, at least one, because I know people who were with me on that job actually went out there and remembered the location and everything else. It was along the lines of someone damaged a power station. I'm not going to say how, and what happened? They lost power, right? And that's our biggest threat, something like that. Also, they called coronal mass ejections, cosmic ray damage. There's been a lot of talk about that. Threats to our grid, because according to most estimates, if the grid goes down, electric grid, basically 90% of the people are dead within a year and a half. A year, year and a half, 2 years, basically, because a lack of resources, lack of food. Medical care, you name it, right? You're going to have mass casualty event. There were a lot of TV shows late 2000s, early 2010s on this. Now, you're going to say, well, Jim, how often does that? That's a black swan event. Black swan. That doesn't happen. And then I remind them that, well, there are black swans in South, no, other hemispheres, Southern Hemisphere, Australia. But here, according to an article, Doug McIntyre from fairly recently, doesn't give me the date on here, all right? Domestic attacks. According to Bloomberg News, attacks on power facilities have spiked recently. Power companies reported 185 physical attacks or threats on grid infrastructure in 2023, and that's increasing over 2021. So, you know, we don't have current things. Now, this is one of the things that worries me are power outages. We recently had a power outage here, but we also had a communications outage. Same thing, right? Communications outage here with the internet problems. People were freaking out. What are people going to do after a couple of days without power? They don't have generators. They don't have this. It's a problem. But people, again, you know, Well, Jim, you had 12 days of power outage after Superstorm Sandy, and people kept it together. Yeah, we kept it together because we had somewhere to go to. A lot of people fled inland with that situation. Had places to go. What do we do with a massive power outage? Like, for example, in, I believe it was 2003, where anything north of Avenel, New Jersey, which is in Woodbridge Township, New Jersey, anything north of that had a power outage. And it was like went all the way up into Canada. And for an extended time until they figured it out. How about in Hawaii last year with the fires where you had things going on with that? How about in Texas where the grid did not have enough capacity a couple of winters ago? That's destruction, all different types of issues. So this stuff does happen. I'm worried about power outage. That's one of my big things. Now, that's category one, not a big issue. Have a couple of hours without power. You have and everything else. You know, fires, that sort of thing. Now, what about the next category? All right, we're going to talk about category two, what Jim has deemed as category two. So, category two is actually real simple. It is 24 to 96 hours. Why is that an issue? 24 to 96 hours. Let's see if we can get this so people can actually read it. All right. What the government tells us is to be prepared for up to 4 days. That's 4 days. So you're looking at longer-term issues, wildfires, huge floods, longer-term power outages, extended weather events, and things of that nature. You're looking at greater things, greater than 4 days. Up to 4 days. Again, we could prepare for that. So, food for 4 days. So, let's talk about this. That's 4 days. Average person drinks 2 gallons of water for 4 days. So that's 8 gallons of water for every person in your household or you're in charge of. Now that doesn't take into account heat or cold, because in heat you're in the house without power, and with water you're going to blow through that 2 gallons pretty easily. So what is about 2 gallons of water? Depending on the size of the bottles, you're looking at a case of water bottles, right? One case for 2 days per person. So 4 days, you're looking at 2 cases per person. You have 4 people in the household. That means you're going to have 2 cases per day. So you're looking at about 8 cases of water is what it comes down to. Now calculate it out. So 2 gallons, right? That's 128 fluid ounces times 2 is 256 ounces. Per person, you could go and you could do the math. So you're talking about 2 gallons per person per day. So you're looking at about 8 gallons, however you want to get there. Bottled water and everything like that. So you're dealing with food for 4 days. Now, this is easy to take care of. Again, preparation means ahead of time. You go out there and you have, like, every time you go shopping, you get an extra can of beans, you get an extra can of pineapple, you get an extra can of this, maybe some of that long-term storage milk and things of that nature, and stuff that you normally eat. You don't want to be in a situation where you have people out there going and getting this, 10, 20, 30, 40-year supplies of food. Well, yeah, this will last 25 years. It'll be long dead and gone. The time you might have to use that. You open it up and you find out everybody's allergic to, has developed a legume allergy from and everything else there, and peanut allergy and all this other. Now you don't have food to eat, blah, blah, blah. You're much better off getting those are good, and those have an application. I'm not saying don't buy them. I'm actually saying do buy them if you can, but realize that it's more important to get stuff that your family will eat, that you will eat. The last thing you want is to have something inedible, and then everybody goes out there, and they can't eat any of this stuff. Again, you have enough, most people have enough capacity for storage for something like that. Generators. Okay, you have a generator. how much fuel you're going to need in 96 hours. And is that going to be a propane, natural gas, a whole home generator that are often for sale, a portable generator, how you're going to set it up? Are you going to be starting it up every month, making sure it's running? How much fuel is it going to run? You want to try it out on a real load. Is that generator have enough power so you don't fry the computers, so you don't fry your refrigerator and freezer? No, because you don't have enough power, enough amperage. Now you're going to, or voltage, you're going to start screwing. I'm not an electrical guy. Now you're going to screw with that and everything else. What are you going to do with that? Then you go into... let's go for our next slide here. And we have slide number 4 here. All right. Category 3. This is where you get, and this is where you get the really serious things. This is like a longer term type of thing. And I know the slides are, I put together in a hurry here. Okay, I'll fix them. All right. This is cause for big concern because it's long term stuff. 4 to 30 days. Okay. These are common in rural more common in rural areas, even though we did get hit with it with Superstorm Sandy where I live, and there are other areas that get hit with hurricanes and things of that nature. We're talking about the East Coast. The West Coast deals with earthquakes, longer-term things, where you're going, right, that's not 4 days the government gives you. That's just to get their stuff together and get things going and got the Red Cross going and all those other organizations. Now you're getting into category 3. You're talking about longer term. Longer term planning. How with that? Very, now, you, I mean, you're in with the big boys here. Now let's talk about water. Now you got to talk about purifying water unless you could store 2 gallons of water per person for 30 days, which comes out to 60 gallons of water per person. That's a lot of freaking water. Now, let's say you have a household of 4 people. Now you're dealing with 240 gallons of water for 1 month. That's a lot of water. You got to have a plan. There are different water sources that you can have. You could have a pool. You can have a well. Okay, you have a well. Now you have power. Need to have power from the well water. Do you have some type of reservoir? People in desert areas, arid areas, a lot of them have reservoirs. They have tanks, water tanks, where they are. Now, at that point, 4 days, you're going to start to get a little bit ripe. And that deodorant ain't going to work so good. There's even a commercial nowadays on that I just watched today. No, where people are out there, hey, would you like to, you know, what happens after a week in the wilderness? Well, anybody could smell you from a mile away. You're smelling like a sea lion, a stellar sea lion up in Alaska, and on the west coast of the United States, where you're smelling this stuff from a quarter mile away, you know? And, you know, now you have sanitary issues. How are you going to vape? You're going to need more than that. How are you going to handle it? 4 to 30 days. Food. For 30 days. That's a lot of food. Where are you going to get it? Does your community have that? What are you going to do? Do you have chickens? Do you have, again, people in rural areas often are more prepared for this sort of thing because they're able to have more capacity. Now you have, right, with that. So now, where are you going to evacuate to? Do you have a fallback area? Do you, can you go to a family member's in another part of the state? Another region, can you get there? How do you get there? How do you plan this out? Do you plan on staying put? Can you get supplies from elsewhere and bring it in? All of this stuff goes into that. So that's a category 3. That's a big deal what to do with that. And then you have the really serious situation, which is category 4. Again, nobody else talks about it this way, but I have to because we have to do systematic type things on how do we do this. So we're going to go to category 4, which is 30 days plus, if you've been following along. Now, this is basically off-the-grid living or primitive living. This requires a huge commitment, storage of huge amounts of food and water and everything else that goes along with this. If you're an average person, you're talking about evacuating somewhere. I don't know of anybody who's prepared to go for 30 days or more. That's not this. I know my friend, God rest in peace, Robert Lustig. He would have been able to do it for 30 days or more, no problem. But the average person, not going to be able to do it, folks. Now, what's, I'm not saying don't attempt to. So that's what I always say, short term. The other thing I want to point out here is this. What are your actual disasters that you're going to have to face? Most likely, category one. Biggest one is if you have a medical issue. I had a family member tell me recently, Jimmy, I just want to pack up. I don't like living where I'm living in the city. I just want to grab my kids and grandkids, and I want to go. I want to leave. I want to get out. I got to break free. Like that Queen song, I got to break free, and I got to get out of this place. I got to go to Pennsylvania. That's it. Look, very lovingly, one of my favorite people, right? I said to her, real simple here. I said, you're going to, you're, I'm familiar with, I am familiar with, I'm familiar with your situation. You may have some health problems. My dear, cousin from many years ago passed away because he had a major health emergency come up. It was one of those ones that, you can't detect. It just happens. Right. Very didn't recognize any of the warning signs because they were like, you know, it's very subtle warning signs. And what happened was there was a huge car accident in his community with multiple fatalities. So his wife called up 911 or 911, as they call it out there. And the ambulance said, look, we will get there as soon as we can. Right. We will get there. But you have to stay put, stay where you are. If you want to stay on the line, stay on the line. There's nothing we could do because all of our emergency resources are wrapped up in this accident here. It's a massive accident. He ended up passing away because he got to the hospital too late. Had he gotten there like 45 minutes earlier, very good chance he'd be here with me today. And we'd be talking about it from a different point of view. But he the capacity wasn't there. That might be a more pressing need than all this other stuff. So if you have a chronic health condition or what have you, where is the nearest hospital? Where's the nearest medical facilities? Am I going to be prepared to respond to this, the need of a family member? Are they going to be able to respond to the need for me? No, this is where AEDs, automatic electronic defibrillators come in. Do we need to have one in the house? And all this other stuff goes in there. That may be a specific need. Another specific need is what we went through with my parents was medicine. What do they ask when you call 911 and you have an EMT come there, a police officer? What medications are they on? How about going to a doctor? We're going to talk about that this month. How do we prepare for this? So what I want, if you don't listen to any other program this month, I want you to come away with one thing, a couple of things. One, assess your situation, analyze it, act, right, and prepare, right, with that and prioritize, number one. Number two, I want you to go out there and prioritize. Big thing. A friend of the program, he and his ex-wife had set up a self-sustaining community. All right. And they had gotten a whole bunch of people together and they basically a commune, sort of thing. And, it wasn't like the commune for like, you know, like Mayflower where they're all starved to death sort of thing. That's a different thing, you know, Mayflower, you know, pilgrims, that sort of thing. It was along the lines of, let's band together, use our resources. We're still going to be capitalists here, unlike the pilgrims. And we're going to go out there and have a community set up and share resources, pool resources. And every year we're going to have one type of thing going on. And so along the lines of, this year we're going to make sure we have a secure food supply. So they learned how to do farming. They learned how to do canning. They had chickens. They had this. Okay, so now they have a secure food supply. And they also went out and made sure they had a secure water source. We're going to have up collecting rainwater. If it's legal, a lot of places it's not legal to collect rainwater. You got to watch out. We're going to go out there and we're going to have a well drilled. And we're going to have that way secured, and we're going to make sure that water is good to drink, blah, blah, blah. Okay, next year, power. We're going to have a power supply. We're going to have resilience. So this is the year we're going to have put in some generators, some whole house generators. We're going to put up some solar panels. We're going to have some batteries. And you get the idea, on and on and on. And over the course of 5 or 6 years, they had themselves a nice little setup. Some people left the commune, some people stayed with the commune, some people, all different types of things were in there. And again, just from one thing a year, what are they coming from? Just from one item a year. And then by the end of 4 or 5 years, and again, they did some things concurrently, but they had one priority a year. Now they went in and they were able to add capacity and add resilience to their situation, which made it safer, which made it more like disaster preparation. So we're going to continue this discussion every day. So we're going to go to our first commercial break, and that was a good one, I think, after I got the stuff straightened out here. So we're going to go to our first commercial break here, and then we'll go out there and do everything. All right, hold on. Boom, boom, boom. I forgot where things were. And I did have programs last week. I did not upload them because they weren't high-quality programs, a couple of them, and they needed a little bit of editing, which I could not do. We'll get back to that today. Uploading.
Have you listened or watched the Safety War Show? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Bozell and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It's definitely, it will take some deep dives and some information that you might be interested in.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
Want to avoid hefty OSHA fines and keep your team safe?
Oh, wrong one. Sorry, folks. I need Jessica. Where are you? Hold on. OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Pozell with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy!
From the front lines of the safety war, it's Safety Wars with your host, Jim Pozell on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
This is going to blow your mind. There's a new daytime talk show on your local cable access station. What happens when safety, scandal, and heartbreak collide? Welcome to Safety Wars, the talk show. Today's episode is a doozy. Imagine confronting your unsafe supervisor who just happens to be your ex-wife's new hubby. Talk about a powder keg. But wait, there's more. We've got an exclusive interview with a corporate exec who's taken out life insurance policies on his riskiest workers, hoping to cash in on a deadly mishap. Yup, You heard that right. It's a real-life plot twist you can't make up. Tune in as Jim Postel, CSP, our very own Jerry Springer of Safety, dives deep into this explosive confrontation. Sparks will fly and secrets will be exposed. Catch the full episode on Safety Wars on YouTube and your favorite podcast platform. Don't miss out on the drama that could save your life. Like and share now, and stay safe, folks.
Okay, you know, those are obvious parody commercials I had made here. I'm having a little bit of fun. I mean, you know, we got to have a little bit of fun here. Now, this is what we have going on here. We're going to talk about the new heat illness proposed standard here. I think we're probably one of the few that are going to be talking about this at all here. So here we have, let me see here. Okay. The Biden-Harris administration. Now, there's a famous radio talk show host, passed away a couple of years ago. And they used to release, he was number one radio talk show host in the country. And he used to schedule vacations, say, okay, I'm going to be going on vacation like the week after next, so something big is going to happen. Or, okay, we got a long holiday weekend coming up, and they're going to announce something. Or something along those lines. And, you know, everybody got a kick out of it. And then after a couple of years, people took notice. They said, son of a gun, he's right. Every time that he's on vacation, something big happens, so he can't comment on it. So what happens? They're talking for years, for freaking years, the Biden-Harris administration, the OSHA. We're coming out with a heat illness and protection plan. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. Blah, 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 blah. And it's delayed, delayed, delayed. Now we're into a situation here. Yeah, we're in an election year, so they got to pay. They got to be a pay day here. And they come up, and if we run over time here, we run over time here, and you can listen to this on the podcast. So here we have Biden-Harris administration's proposed rule to protect indoor and outdoor workers from extreme heat's dangers opens for public comment. Okay, it gets released right before the election. Holiday weekend, we were off. My friends in the UK that, no, I have a UK client. Yeah, we had off yesterday, right? No, a lot of emails I woke up to. But anyway, what the hell's going on? No, they release it on a holiday weekend, Friday, late Friday. Nobody has time. Nobody has the temerity. Nobody has anything to do. This is a holiday weekend, and guess what? First of all, we don't have to worry about COVID, really. That's off the radar for most places. So people are out there enjoying themselves. Nobody wanted to look this stuff up. So what do you have? They release on the news release from last Friday, Biden-Harris administration's proposed rule to protect indoor-outdoor workers from extreme heat dangers opens for a couple of like, comments. So this is going to be out there all for election season. And regardless of how this goes, they're going to rescind it because I don't see how any of this is going to make it through the regulatory process here. So we have until the end of the year to comment on this. Now, there are good things and there are bad things about this. The good things is if you want to put together a program on how to do training on heat illnesses and the related illnesses and situations, beautifully written resource. There's over 300 and some pages that talks about cost-benefit analysis, different types of illnesses, different ways of managing things. It's wonderful. Wonderful. You got to read it. Just even if this doesn't pass, read it. It's a great resource, number one. Number two is this. All right. I don't think it's going to pass. I don't think this is going to go. If it goes down, again, if they win the election, guess what? It might be implemented, and that's good. If they don't win the election, guess what? Doesn't matter. It's going to be rescinded like the ergonomic standard back in the early 2000s, when the new administration comes in. Now, how has this been regulated here? This whole thing, how has this been regulated? This has been regulated through the General Duty Clause. right? OSHA's general duty clause, which basically says that you have to give your employee a safe and healthful workplace free of recognized hazards. And it being, and heat being a thing, and you got to go through the four things with that. You got to prove that, and that's how it is. It's a pain in the neck. You know, towards the end of this, we'll go through, I'll replay the little video that I did on that. I don't want to talk about it. Now, let's go over to the actual regulation here with this. All right, we're going to do a share screen, and let's see if we can do it. Can we do it? Yes, here it is. So here is the actual regulation on here. And let me see if I could zoom in on it. Blah, 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 blah. Zoom, zoom, zoom. Okay. So heat illness and injury prevention. Scope and application. Except as otherwise provided in this paragraph, right? So this is how all regulations are set up. So it's 1910-148. And this is, I'll skip ahead. Here's a spoiler. It applies to all industries. Period. That's what it's going to be. Except as otherwise provided, this applies to all employers. The standard does not apply to work activities. And so this is what you do first. It doesn't apply to me. Work activities for which there is no reasonable expectation of exposure at or above the initial heat trigger. Two, short-duration employee exposures at or above the initial heat trigger of 15 minutes or less in any 60-minute period. Right? Or three, organizations whose primary function is the performance of firefighting, emergency response activities, and workplace emergency response teams, emergency medical services, that's EMS, technical search and rescue, and any emergency response activities already covered under 29 CFR 1910-120, that's HAZWOPR, 1910-146, permit required confined space, 1910-156, I forget what that is, part 1915, which is shipyards, 1926-65, which is, again, the 1910-120 counterpart in construction, 1926-1211, which is permit required confined spaces in construction, and let's go on over to the next column. Another exemption, work activities performed in indoor work areas or vehicles where air conditioning consistently keeps the ambient temperature below 80 degrees Fahrenheit. Get used to carrying this around, folks, the thermoanemometer. Telework, done from home or remote location, the employees choosing. Sedentary work activities at indoor work areas that only involve some combination of the following sitting. Following sitting, occasional standing and walking, employers whose employees all exclusively perform activities described in paragraph A2I through VI, which is 6. And then you have your all different types of definitions and things of that nature. Now, this is C. The employer... heat injury and illness prevention plan. The employer must develop and implement a worksite heat injury and illness prevention plan, HIPP, H-I-I-P-P. They like double letters here in OSHA, right? With site-specific information, the H-I-I-P-P must include basically your basic safety plan, right, with that. An identification and heat metric, what are you using to monitor this work area? If the employer has employees who wear impermeable clothing, if the employer has more than 10 employees, the HIPP must be written, right? Must be written. So under 10 employees, this could be verbal. I don't recommend that because, we were never told that. We were never told that. Well, nobody told us this. Maloney, you have to be in writing. All the time. All right. If the employer, because you have workers' comp issues, and if you're a general contractor or host employer, you have other types of things, you may want to require a written program. If the employer, right, the employer must designate one or more heat safety coordinators to implement and monitor the HIPP. That's more or less your competent person. The employer must seek the input and involvement of non-managerial employees and their representatives. So, in other words, somebody sitting in an office drinking coffee and eating donuts in January shouldn't be writing this. You know, who has no and will never go outside. Right? What it is. The employer must review and evaluate the effectiveness of the hip when a heat-related illness or injury occurs that results in death, days away from work, medical treatment beyond first aid, or loss of consciousness. The employer must make the hip readily available to the worksite to all employees, meaning training. The hip must be available in a language that each employee's supervisor and heat safety coordinator understands. Identifying heat hazards. You have to identify those things. All different types of ways. You can do air monitoring. You can do a heat index forecast. You can do all different types of stuff out there with that. And I could see that's going to be a whole training class in itself. Okay. And going through their heat index, and it goes in there to talk about what that is. But the employer must see the input and involvement of non-managerial employees. Heat metrics, the heat metric of the employer chooses to monitor will be determined. So you got to choose how you're going to do it. Exemption from monitoring. The employer can assume that the temperature at work area is at or above both the initial heat and high heat triggers instead of conducting on-site measurements or tracking. So with that, and it also regulates here the requirements that are above the initial heat trigger. Timing, the employer must implement the controls described in this paragraph when employees are exposed to heat at or above the initial heat trigger. We're going to talk about what that is. Drinking water, the employer must provide access to potable water, place in locations readily. I've always said, especially if you're doing emergency response or your mobile crew, bring your own water for the first 2 days. Let them figure things out. Now, my opinion, again, my opinion, not OSHA's, my opinion, experience, if you're the employer, you've had better tell your employees initially. If you're involved in emergency response, bring your own water. We'll reimburse you for it, number one. And number two, have everything together within 3 hours at the latest. It has to be suitably cool. Usually that's around 50 degrees Fahrenheit to 60 degrees Fahrenheit, like a stout, right? And break areas for at outdoor work sites. The employer must provide one or more areas for employees to take breaks. So you can have artificial shade, air conditioning, indoor work sites. You know, you can have a break room or something like that with, like a cooling center. And, it goes in here, right? Fans. Could be another one, your old-fashioned fans. The employer must implement one of the following acclimatization protocols for each employee during the first week of work, right? And it goes through all of that stuff, gradual acclimatization, then you have returning workers, and you have to have they have numbers in here. The exemptions are if you already believe and you have discernible empirical evidence that the employee is always doing that. Now, I would, or has already previously acclimated. Now, what I would tell you to do is this. You have to make sure that your employees are able to tolerate the heat. How you're going to do that, I have no idea with that. If they're subject to respiratory protection and you're complying with the 19-134 respirator standard or the 19-10-120 has offer standard or any standard like that, you may have some type of physical that's associated with that. And it's often the case physicals, HAZWOFR physicals, they identify people who are intolerant to heat and medical things. But again, you know, what's the, you have to have, they're relying on the employer, on the employee, to tell the employer about risk factors that the employer may not realize. So, for example, the training has to be heat stress hazards, heat-related injuries and illnesses, risk factors, including age, health, alcohol consumption, and use of certain medications. We're coming up to the end here, so we're going to have our outro disclaimer here. with this. For our Safety FM family of listeners, if not, you can listen to this on the podcast here if you find this interesting. Signs and symptoms of heat-related illness, which ones requires emergency action. With that, all different ways of managing heat and heat-related illnesses and training and record-keeping. All of that's got to be in there. So if you don't like this stuff, you got to go and you have to do that. It looks like we'll make it on time here. That's what I have with this. Again, this is something that you need to really consider. December 30th is when you have to issue comments. Let me know what you think. I think this is not going to pass, in my opinion. This will never be implemented with this because there are going to be a lot of people, small business owners, who are not going to want to do this. So, for Safety Wars and Safety FM, this is Jim Polzel. We'll see you tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.